Fan.
Listen.
Time for two more.
Personal foul. Clipping.
What in the ham fat is going on with you guys?
Minnesota has won the toss, and Minnesota is going to win the game.
The game is over.
Good stuff.
The Philadelphia Eagles have won the NFC Championship 4-3-2-1 by the final score, the Eagles 31, the 49ers 7. Attention, air traffic control. A flock of Eagles is heading to Arizona.
I like courtesy Sports Radio 94, WIP, out Philly way.
Fox.
Merrill Reese, it's Paul Allen. A very happy Thursday to you, my friend. How are things?
Things are great so far. I'll let you know a week from Sunday night.
Mr. Merrill Reese is coming up on nearly 50 years as the Vox of Philadelphia Eagles football, 2016 inductee into the Eagles Hall of Fame. And he's called every Super Bowl in which the Eagles have played, including 52, the Philly special in Minneapolis. Merrill, it's just great to speak with you again. And, you know, speaking of Super Bowl 52, the Philly special, U.S. Bank Stadium, is or was it good you called that Super Bowl from the corner angle at U.S. Bank Stadium? Because it's kind of the same, but deeper in Glendale for the game against the Chiefs.
I know. Not my favorite spot. In fact, people ask me, Paul, to this day, was I nervous about the last play of the Super Bowl where Tom Brady had one last throw into the end zone? And I said, no. I said I was nervous, but not because of Tom Brady, because he was never the Hail Mary guy that, say, Aaron Rodgers was. And the Eagles were up by 8 points, not by seven. So they needed a touchdown and a two-point conversion. I said, I was nervous because I was sitting 110 yards away from where that ball was going to end up, and I didn't want to be known as the broadcaster who blew the ending to the Super Bowl. Mm. I mean, Paul, let's face it. They put us in worse seats with each new stadium, it seems, except the old dump in Washington. But basically, I think we're their last consideration.
A significant consideration for potential head coaching jobs could be Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon. And I knew Jonathan quite well from his days here with the Vikings. What do you like about his personality and authenticity?
I like everything. I really do. He, as you know, he's a great guy, and he's not a guy who points to himself, and it's not all about JG. It's about his players, and it's about what they do week in and week out. And they love him. They really love him. He knows how to work with people. He knows how to put them in the position to succeed. He doesn't overreact, because he's gotten a lot of criticism here from certain fans who think they should be blitzing on every down. But he does what he has to do, and he understands that that's just part of the job. I think he'd make somebody a great head coach.
Well, wait a second. A one seed Eagles team rolling through everybody in the postseason, heading to the Super Bowl, and Philly fans criticizing something that is good? Are you kidding me?
Not for the past 2 weeks. For the past 2 weeks, they're on board with everything. Listen, they're great fans. They're passionate fans. I mean, years ago, do you remember Sid Gilman, the great Sid Gilman?
Oh, yeah.
Who's in the Hall of Fame. He was Dick Vermeil's offensive advisor, and I was always asking him questions about the offense and what they're doing here. And he took me aside one day. He said, let me tell you something. every Sunday, there are 67,000 fans in the stadium, and they are all offensive coordinators. So you just have to do what you can do. Now the people now have seen enough of offense, so now they've become defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is he's done a great job. He's a great fan, and he's known not to take that stuff personally.
And whether it's Sirianni with the Eagles or here with Minnesota, first-year coach Kevin O'Connell, it's the wave of head coaches generally are younger fellows who are of the offensive variety. Now, D'Amico Ryans gets the job with the Houston Texans. Jonathan Gannon, a defensive coordinator, do you think he'll get a head coaching job soon? I mean, like you said, he's young, he's vibrant, and the defense is on a roll.
I thought, Paul, that the soon was going to be this season, and apparently it's not. I mean, he said after the championship game, he said, I'm back here next year. He said that they'll have me back. And because I think they are drying, the jobs are drying up right now because you have Sean Payton now in Denver, and then D'Amico Ryans, who was thought to be going to Denver, ends up with the Texans. And now, not young, but you have Frank Reich, who's a great coach, by the way, landing in Carolina. And what else do you have now? You have Arizona. And let me tell you something else. I don't know if we've ever spoken about this. I think one of the craziest things that I've ever heard or seen is where an organization says, we want an offensive head coach, or we're going to take a head coach from the defensive side of the ball, because I don't think it matters. I don't think any of that matters. To me, the qualities you want in a head coach are, number one, leadership, number two, motivational ability, number three, the ability to judge talent and put those players in the right positions to succeed. These are the, and number four, and this is huge, because I was around one coach who had none of this, and that is the ability to really communicate. But every other coach has been pretty good in that one area, except I don't want to mention any names, Chip Kelly. So for the most part, though, I think that's a big part of it. And what difference is it if he's a good coach, if he's a smart coach, and he was an offensive coach, he'll hire a great defensive coordinator and vice versa.
Fox.
Merrill Reese calls Philadelphia Eagles games on radio, and he has done so for nearly half a century, including all the Super Bowls, 52 at U.S. Bank Stadium. Victorious were the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, speaking of offense, Merrill, with Sanders, Boston Scott, and Gainwell, you know, I just, and when we were there week two and you and I saw each other and the Eagles killed our beloved Vikings, I left the game thinking, I just, how much I love those guys and then Hurts, and they all run, but the way it's balanced, there are fresh legs in the fourth quarter every single game. I mean, it's such an underappreciated value the Eagles have.
Well, it is, and a lot of it has to do with what I was concerned with during the preseason, the fact that they hardly ever hit. The practices were short. They were intense, but they were never any more than an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and a half. And there was no tackling to the ground. I mean, none. And as the practices went on during the season, there was a Wednesday walkthrough, and then they went at it a little bit on Thursday, and Friday was walkthrough again, and what they called the dress rehearsal on Saturday, where they just call out the different position groups. But you know what? This team has all 22 starters healthy.
Right.
I mean, to me, that's amazing. I can't remember a team arriving at this point fresh and healthy, but they're all back. And that is a tribute to the fact that Nick Sirianni knew what he was doing, and he felt that he wanted them to get stronger as the year went on, not being weakened by overwork. And it really has. I mean, listen, I was there when Dick Vermeil's practices were reenactments of the Bataan Death March. I mean, they brought 100 guys to camp. They had practices for 3 hours in the morning. They'd be hitting again in the afternoon. And the Buddy Ryan camps, oh, my goodness. Half the time you had to turn away because the hits were so hard. So it's a new NFL. It's a more health-conscious and NFL, where you're trying to save your guys for the very biggest moments.
Now, a coach you didn't mention, Merrill, Andy Reid. Now, did you and Big Red get along well when he was coaching the Eagles?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of your favorites?
It's definitely one of my favorites. I have a lot of favorites, really. But Andy, certainly, my all-time favorite was Dick Vermeil. But Andy's a great coach. He's the winningest coach in Eagles history. He's not Mr. Warm and friendly at press conferences. He's never been Mr. Crack a joke. And Nick Sirianni's very, very warm and has a lot of fun with the guys at press conferences. Andy was, here are the injuries, time's yours, get it over with. But one-on-one, and I've been on Andy Reid show each week, he was great. And he's a great man, and he's a bright man, and he's a terrific coach. And I think if you want to really know what Andy Reid is like, you have to watch that commercial where he's drawing the beard on one guy, and then Patrick Mahomes comes by with the handlebar mustache drawn on, and Andy Reid says, "We'll get to the end of that," with a wink. He's a lot of fun. He's a great guy.
Merrill, what do you remember about the first Super Bowl you called, the Raiders and the Eagles, and Super Bowl 15?
Well, I remember it as one of the most disappointing days that you could ever spend calling the games of the team that you followed and watched rise throughout the season. A lot of people felt that the Eagles Super Bowl was really the NFC Championship game on January 11th, 1981, on a bitterly cold day when they beat the Dallas Cowboys 20-7. And that was Eagles Cowboys, huge game. Eagles won it. Nothing could be bigger or better. And then came the Super Bowl, and it was almost a letdown, and there were interceptions early, and the Eagles were never really in that game. It was a very, very disappointing game. But here's the thing, Paul, and I remind people of this. When the Eagles got on the plane the next day to go home, they said almost to a man, you know what, you have to get to one of these Super Bowls to realize what it's like all week and feel the experience, and then next year we're going to come back and win this thing. Well, next year didn't come until 2004.
Yeah.
And they didn't win that one either.
Yeah, about it. It's so fleeting, right? I mean, not that I would know, but you didn't get back for a quarter century. I mean, seasons like that and seasons like this, I mean, they just have to be the best, right, Merrill?
Well, this has been a great team, Paul. Somebody asked me at a talk show in San Francisco. They said, "What are the Eagles' weaknesses?" And I said, "You know, I don't really think they have any, because every time they needed to shore up an area, the defensive line was having a little injury problems, and they were giving up too many yards early on the run. So what did Howie Roseman do? He went out and got Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh. That took care of that. Mm-hmm. Every time they needed more safety help right before the season, and this was a big move, they made a deal with New Orleans and brought in C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who tied for the – even though he missed four or five games with injuries, he still led the league, or was tied for the league lead, with six interceptions. And then they needed another corner to pair up with Darius Slay. And they watched when the Giants let go of James Bradbury, let him walk, and he's been terrific for this team. And then the free agent signing, Hassan Reddick, he should be really considered as defensive player of the year. 16 sacks, numerous fumble recoveries, forced great tackles. He's been sensational. And then the draft day trade for A.J. Brown. I mean, how impactful was that? So there are no overt weaknesses. Now, that doesn't mean they can't lose this game, because the best team on paper doesn't always win the game. But let me tell you, this team is the most complete Eagles team I have been around in my 46 years.
Merrill, that was all my and our pleasure. Safe travels. Call a good one, as I know you will, and we'll catch up down the road, okay?
Paul, it's always fun speaking with you. Take care and have a great weekend.
Thank you, my friend. Merrill Reese, nearly a half century calling Philadelphia Eagles football. And the oldest of the old schoolers with the baton death march, they just don't care.
I always love that one.
Thank you, TimberTech. Thank you, TimberTech.com. Now, for the other side of the story, Mitch Holthus, who's called two Super Bowls for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to join us next, part of the TimberTech What's on Deck set list, which includes about 20 minutes from now, a celebration of the Howl getting a dub against the Dubs last night before a sellout crowd, and it seemed to be loud and frenzied. Plus, there's much more, and we thank you for joining us. I'm Paul Allen. This is 9 to noon at KFAN, and Nordo has the money thing.
The Fan, along with Adams Pest Control, they want to put a grand in your hand via the National Cash Contest for your shot to win. All you got to do, go to KFAN.com, enter the keyword money. Might win $1,000 in money by using the keyword money at KFAN.com.
The squib. It bounds in front of the receiver. Clock now. They're going to throw it across the formation, and it is caught over there now, slipping, and the Chiefs will tackle him. This game is over. This game is over. You can doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You can disrespect the Chiefs. You're going to have to deal with the Chiefs as the AFC champions.
That's Chiefs Vox Mitch Holthus via 106.5 The Wolf, Chiefs Radio Network.
Vox.
Ah, yes. The sweet nectar of the Vox. An elite Vox, Mitch Holthus, longest tenured voice in the history of football immortality. And that would be the Kansas City Chiefs. And I figured we'd go to begging this Vox the week before it gets all clompy for Mitch Holthus as he heads down Arizona way. Mitch, congratulations on being part of a fantastic team and a wonderful, wonderful closing to the AFC title game. Back to the Super Bowl for the third time for you. And next week, like, what's the week up to the Super Bowl like for a play-by-play voice? Does it just get all cloppy?
It's very cloppy. That's a great way of putting it. Now, I will raise the chalice holding the sweet nectar from the Chiefs kingdom and raise it to the love covenant. I've told you this before, PA, but my favorite uncle lives in the cities. My cousins have the cities surrounded. They are huge Chiefs fans, but they're also huge fans of the Vikings. They have dual citizenship. They now, when the Chiefs play the Vikings, as we'll visit your spaceship next year to play a game, everybody gets silent for that week. But the remainder of the time, they raise the chalice as well, take a sip of the nectar with a skull chaser, if you will. So they're listening this morning. They've gone through a lot. They lost one of my cousins, lost her husband way too soon. He was 53 years old, huge Gopher fan, huge Viking fan. Mm. It was a rough couple years for him. During our training camp, he passed. But anyway, they're an incredible family. But they do have dual citizenship, and yes, they love the Vikes.
Well, first and foremost, may God rest the soul of the departed. Amen. and those, you know, involved, friends and family members who are grieving. That's first and foremost. And secondly, indeed, it is not a radio show. It is a sweet nectar covenant. It's Paul Allen, 9 to noon on The Fan with Mitch Holthus. He's the Vox for the Kansas City Chiefs. And strangely, It won't be much warmer in Arizona in a week and a half compared to Kansas City when you're down there. So I'm like, great, you know, Mitch is going to leave the 30s and the 40s, get down there, get some 70s and 80s. Man, it's going to be like in the low 60s, Mitch.
And, yeah, I know. and they had me beat the drum. It was the Seattle Seahawks game on Christmas Eve. You know, it's a big deal. And honestly, it's where we honor Native American heritage of several tribes that were indigenous in the Chiefs kingdom. But they said, hey, we want you to beat the drum. This is a great honor. I'm like, outstanding. It was minus 10 wind chill that day. Mm. I realized, PA,
like you have many times where you're going, what a great honor. I was the only one that would accept doing it. But I felt like I was chopping ice back on the farm where my favorite uncle living in the cities also grew up. But it was a very icy Minnesotan kind of day that day. So we're used to the cold. We're used to the, hey, bring it on. Let's go. This Chiefs team has faced everything they could possibly face, and they've handled it. It's been right in front of them, and they just take what's in front of them and deal with it. It's a very unique group. It's a group that, even as you look from afar as a neutral observer, there's a lot to admire about this team. And they've really been undersold, those thoughts for months then begat how I ended that game in the AFC Championship against the Bengals.
And for those who follow me on Twitter, at PA on the mic, I retweeted or quote tweeted exactly what Mitch is talking about, a game sealing call with the camera in the booth, and very well done, you know. But then I was looking at it after I listened to it and got done with the tweet and everything, Mitch, and it does. And I've called games there, you know, and so therefore when we go there or we go to Miami, you know, and you got that thick glass, man. Does calling games full time behind that thick glass ever get to you?
Always. I'm not. We redid the epicenter of the Chiefs Kingdom, aka Arrowhead Stadium, and it is Arrowhead Stadium,
right?
So we get that clear. Mm-hmm. But yes, I have no idea who designed it, but they put this, you know, bulletproof glass in front of us, and the sound then just reverberates. So we've had to do all kinds of engineering marvels to make the sound as natural as it can possibly be. But it's, yeah, no, they didn't do that right. So I've not been to your Starship Enterprise yet, so I look forward to it next fall.
You'll love it.
And I'm not sure what's waiting me there. But I know at Arrowhead, it's such an awesome venue.
Yeah.
Arrowhead, and you've been there, but it's incredible. It's really a very iconic venue. But to do a game there, not so much. Not when the sound is just you literally are in saran wrap doing the game. So that's okay. I mean, I deal with it. It's fine.
Amen.
But anyway, you ask.
in 21, when your Chiefs beat mm-hmm. Philly, Hurts almost mm-hmm. threw for 400, but the Chiefs yep. did a really nice job slowing his run. Now, I mean, he's better now than he was then. But what do you yep. remember about that one in 21, a very high-scoring game?
I know you do this with the Love Covenant and your vast listeners and your over 200,000 followers on Twitter. Many times, do not be fooled by passing yards. Mm-hmm. You've got to dig into the weeds of the game and go, well, where do those yards occur? Now, I don't want to cast aspersions on Jalen Hurts.
Yes, sir.
He has grown so much since that game that we played him. And by the way, that was a very historic game because that was the game where Andy Reid made another piece of history where he won 100 games with two separate franchises. No head coach had ever done that, in the history of the National Football League. So that day was a bigger day than you may realize than just some, week four game in September. But a lot of Hurts' yards in that game were after the game had been decided. And so you get a lot of 300-yard passing games where, let's say 180 of them come after they're two or three scores down. The Chiefs, and I say this humbly, but we're in control of that game. Now, this is a much better Philadelphia team. They've done an excellent job of what they've added in free agency. They've drafted very astutely. This is a Eagles team, and you saw them in the flesh, that has no weakness. But this is also, PA, where we've undersold the Chiefs. And that was kind of leading to the way I ended the Cincinnati game. It's kind of mystifying to me that, and again, saying this humbly, because you've got Proverbs 22:4 on your, you know, your avatar on your Twitter page. And I claim in 1 Peter 5:5-8, which is, you know, humble, God's opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Those who, you know, so being humble is good here. But here's my point. The Chiefs have won 12 games for five straight seasons. This is their third Super Bowl trip in 4 years. They've won the AFC West for seven consecutive years. And yet all the prognosticators were saying during the summer the Chiefs would be covered in molten lava like Mount Vesuvius erupting by Halloween. Well, it didn't. All of a sudden, because of these narratives of like the Chiefs were going to collapse, the outsiders have not fully appreciated what the Chiefs have been. And they're very much a mirror of the Eagles. This is a Chiefs team that is very tough. They also have three Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. They're much more resilient and better on the defensive end than stats would indicate because they're ahead a lot of the times. They're in control of a game.
Right.
And this is also a young team. So that's, you know, I'm on the soapbox here, but this is a great Super Bowl matchup between two teams that have been kind of pieced together in very similar ways.
Faith and Goal.
Featuring Mitch Holtis, play-by-play voice for the Kansas City Chiefs. Welcome back. I'm Paul Allen. And with Jalen, man, I mean, you know, when we got killed by them week two, I left and would tell anybody who would listen, if you think you're going to roll into that building and win two playoff games, it ain't going to happen. This quarterback is exponentially better than what I remember and just in control. The A.J. Brown trade was, it was immortality. I mean, it's exactly what he needed. But, you know, one thing I'm sure you know, but you're going to see when you call the game at State Farm is the way they use these backs, man. Sanders, Boston Scott, Gainwell, and Hurts, they all run. But they mix them up so nicely, they have fresh legs in the fourth quarter. You got to be wary of that, Mitch.
And duly noted, I'm scribbling as we talk. and again, PA, there's a mirror here with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
They have done precisely the same thing. They get a seventh-round draft pick from Rutgers, Isaiah Pacheco, who nobody knows about, and he ends up being one of the top rookie running backs in the entire National Football League. And then, may I say this, former Viking, take a bow, Jerick McKinnon,
right,
who rediscovered drinking the chalice of the sweet nectar, the fountain of youth, who in his ninth year sets or at least has the most rushing touchdowns by a running back since 1966. And it's very similar. And so the Eagles, all four of those dudes you mentioned, they can catch it as well as run it.
Yeah.
And that's where Philadelphia is so effective. And the same thing with the Chiefs. They can run it and catch it. And, oh, by the way, there's Ronald Jones Jr. who's sitting here who beat us in Super Bowl 55. So, yes, there is this group of running backs that do it as like a quadratic equation in algebra. And both the Eagles and Chiefs have that luxury.
Mitch Holtis, play-by-play voice for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Vox.
Time for a couple more here for the elite Vox calling his third Super Bowl. And you've called a Chiefs Super Bowl win and loss. Which one leaves a more lasting memory?
Truly the victory.
Yeah.
Super Bowl 55. Let's go to 19 and Super Bowl 54. And that Chiefs team was very unique. I mean, you guys saw them during the regular season that year at the epicenter of the Chiefs kingdom. But for the Chiefs, that run to be down by 24 points at 24-0 in the second quarter to the Houston Texans and then win by 20, to be down by 10 to the Titans and win by 10, and then to be down at 7 minutes to go in the game in Super Bowl 54 by 10, and San Francisco celebrating too soon, and the Chiefs coming back to win, and the run to immortality by Damian Williams, then you never forget those moments. Now, it's a fair question because Super Bowl 55 left also different memories, but it was a strange, strange time. It was the COVID time. It was really not the Super Bowl. There was no radio row. There was Zoom calls, aplomb. We go in Friday night before the game, and we're playing in Tampa Bay Stadium. It would be the Vikes hosting the Super Bowl and playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was just weird. And then there was a tragic circumstance that happened right before we left that was involving Coach Reed's son. It was just it was weird. And it was just off this grid. So that thing is just a memory in and of itself. But to win Super Bowl 55, and particularly the way they won it, will last as long as the Lord gives me oxygen on the earth.
And lastly, you know, off that victory, Mitch, did you almost gag when Sanders got behind the defense to win it and Jimmy G overthrew it?
For sure, because I saw the post pattern with a step on two different DBs.
Ugh.
And then, yes, because, you know, the Chiefs in there now Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid have helped expunge a lot of playoff misery. And I'm telling you, Viking fans, it's coming. You'll wash it out. And when it happens, it's a beautiful thing, as Coach Reed would say. But you're thinking, oh my gosh, is this the anvil once again over the head of Wile E. Coyote? Or is Charlie Brown going to kick the ball? And when that ball sailed over the head of Sanders, Charlie Brown kicked a 55-yard field goal out of the great hold of Lucy, and there was no anvil, and Wile E. Coyote ate the Roadrunner. So, but since then, I mean, the fact that Patrick Mahomes is just a brilliant, not only brilliant quarterback, he's really a good dude. I know you see him in, you know, dropping, having bubble baths and having mustaches drawn on his face, but there's really a lot to love. The Love Covenant would indeed love Patrick Mahomes. Now, as an opponent, you don't like him, but he is really everything you would want in a quarterback, and even as a person. This kid's a humble kid deep down, and he is tough as they get. To play on a high ankle sprain and to throw for over 300 yards on that defense, because Cincinnati's very similar to Philadelphia. There is no weakness on that Bengals team. You can't find it. And so for Mahomes to pull that off and yet still be the winningest quarterback in NFL history in his first 5 years as a starter, and to do things, and of all the main passing categories where we put metrics up in front of a quarterback, whether it's yards or touchdowns or TD to INT ratio or QBR, he's number one in NFL history in his first 5 years as a starter in every category. Sans interceptions, where Rodgers, your friend Aaron Rodgers, has two less interceptions did have in his first 5 years as a starter. But it's also the persona of Patrick Mahomes, his humility, that the locker room loves him. I always say this analogy. He is having the game at the end of the street. Everybody get on your bikes and ride to Pat's house, because we're all going to get a game up and we're going to have a great time. It's like when my favorite Uncle Alan would come home from the cities and come visit us on the farm in Smith County, Kansas, and I could not wait because I knew we were going to chop it up and we're going to get a game up somehow. And that's what it is with Patrick Mahomes. Hey, guys, bring your bikes. Come on down to the end of the street. And that's really the persona of Patrick Mahomes and part of the Mahomes magic that you don't see if you're not inside the castle.
Verbally speaking, you are that bike, that Schwinn, that has the banana seat, the tassels coming off the handlebars,
oh yeah,
the bell,
oh, yeah,
and the big bar to,
oh, yeah,
keep your back in one place. So, hey, man.
I had exactly that bike you just described as my childhood bike on the farm in Smith County, Kansas. You just... Perfect. As if I sent you a picture. So well done.
That's the sweet nectar of the Vox. Safe travels. Best of luck. I'll be listening.
Thanks, sir.
And hopefully you guys win the game. Have fun, all right?
Thank you, brother. And I do the humility thing. I love it that you put 22-4 up there. 1 Peter 5:5-8, I'm claiming as I go to Arizona. We just saw a team that I don't know why they started spouting off.
No, you're right.
I don't know why that mayor said what he did, but it was... Like, it was like his time. It was like some Packer fan trying to troll you on Twitter. I'm like, this is the mayor doing this?
Yeah.
And honestly, you saw the reaction of our guys.
Yeah.
They poked the bear. Bad move.
Well,
faith and goal.
Proverbs 22:4. The reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. Pride goes before destruction. And all God's people said amen. Thank you very much.
Amen. Amen, my brother.
Mitch Altus, play-by-play voice for the Kansas City Chiefs, and 9 to noon continues.
KFAN.
Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that whistling man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
I mean, the defense in the second half was incredible. You know, we felt... You know, when we were doing the things in the first half that we talked about, we were good, and then we just got lazy and sloppy in some of the coverages at times. And, you know, E.T. and his crew did a great job of tightening that up at halftime. And we came out with, you know, really on point there. And that was the key, you know, and then the rebounding. You know, we rebounded well, you know, on both ends of the floor.
Finchy, Chris Finch, coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, who might have to stop second-guessing himself. And to a certain extent, he did last night. And it's something one of my favorites shared 9 to noon on Tuesday. And last night, it involved Anthony Edwards.
It shows a resilience. But I got to give the credit to Jaden, Austin. They did an incredible job with Steph, man, throughout the whole game. And in the fourth, I don't even know how many points he had, how many points he scored, but I just know they did a great job.
Yep. Sweet Georgia Brown, though, with that soft shoe. Got some soft shoe up in here. Benji and Anthony Edwards. By the way, the Timberwolves are going to be at Second Harvest Heartland today with a philanthropic endeavor. And Second Harvest Heartland, which aids us with Chris's inclusion every single week. Please go to toharvest.org if you have time, because they need volunteers. Contributions always are great, and thank you and God bless you for it. But
it's actually a really cool and easy thing to do, too. I've done it in the past, and
my kids
are still too young, but once they turn 8, I'm going to get them in the mix, put the ladies to work. But it's super cool, super easy, it's fun, and it's a good way to support and give.
And that is with Second Harvest.
Yeah.
Is it Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center? It's somewhere up there, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Toharvest.org if you want to learn more, but they're going to be there today, I believe, around 3 o'clock. Finchie and his gang, and like Nordo beautifully amplified, volunteering not only is heartwarming and awesome, but it really, really would help Second Harvest Heartland. And learn more at toharvest.org. So from the philanthropic approach to everything to a certain extent charitable nature of the Golden State Warriors last evening, where I don't know if it's the cold. I don't know if it's cornfields, flyover terrorism, middle of the week. You know, they just they treated the game like we have you whenever we want you. And we have that proverbial metaphorical button that we're going to push because we got all our dogs. I mean, that was a dog lineup last night. You got Steph. You got Clay. You got Draymond, who was playing well. You got Wiggins, who just came back from an injury, second game back from an injury. And, you know, Andrew has lit up his former team in the past. You got Kevon Looney off the bench, blocking shots and grabbing rebounds. Kuminga, I mean, that was a one-man train wreck last evening, doing everything he could to try to keep the Timberwolves in the game. But they got Dante DiVincenzo. They got their dogs, Jordan Poole. They had their dog lineup last night. And the Timberwolves didn't. The Wolves, of course, down Cat. Can't find him with a searchlight. Hopefully he returns you know, shortly or right after the All-Star break or whatever.
Well, Tim Connolly was with Barrero, I think, Tuesday afternoon.
Yep.
And it sounds like basically there's no timeline. Like they're not interested in even putting a hey, we're on the 4-week track or here's where he is in the grand scheme of things and an arbitrary percentage in terms of his health.
Yeah.
Connolly wouldn't commit to anything with Bump. You can podcast that and Connolly's great with Barrero, but it doesn't sound like anything is nearing the horizon right now for the kitty.
Bumper to bumper on demand though, KFAN.com. Well, that's unfortunate because I did not hear that, and I've felt that a Karl Anthony Towns return somewhere around the All-Star break or shortly after the All-Star break. There, you know, I mean, if he's going to come back in mid March or late March, well, of course you'll take him. But man, it would really be nice to get a full month and change run with Karl Anthony Towns up to the postseason, because last night Finchie was saying Stifle, you know, and Stifle was a late scratch. So now, you know, Naz Reid had a terrific game last night, and Naz Reid taking those corner J's, well, those all belong to Karl Anthony Towns. So that to a certain extent, because Naz is not as gifted overall as Karl Anthony Towns, but I mean, it can be argued that, you know, he has a little bit more junkyard dog to him and just, you know, an appreciation for what he has and how hard he has to work to earn it. And you got that last night. But you don't get that every game from Naz Reid for whatever the reason, because human nature gets to win sometimes too. But Finch, Chris, the head coach, Tuesday 9 to noon, you know, he was talking about certain facets in the Sacramento game compared to the first Sacramento game. And I've heard Chris allude to this before, or I've read it in stories written by the Elite Johnny Athletic. About, well, I just needed to, I should have stuck with my bench. I should have stuck with the bench. And those are games, whether Stifle Tower is in or out, Cat's forever out, at least this season. So it generally involves Rudy Gobert. And like in the overtime against the Sacramento Kings, it was Trey Lyles, Malik Monk, somebody was open in the corner early in overtime, right in front of the Wolves bench. And that was Rudy Gobert's man, you know, but trying to get 7 foot Stifel Tower out to the corner to block a shot or even change a shot in lickety split fashion because the ball movement was so quickly. As I said to Chris, that's a big ask. And Chris came back with, yeah, but that's his guy. So therefore you parse your way between the opinion formulated and the fact known, and in the middle somewhere is the answer. And it didn't take place with Stifel against Sacramento, and you could tell the head coach was bugged. So when I say Finch might have to stop second-guessing himself, it plays a lot into that. When he said a couple of days ago, at times, that sticking with the bench guys is what he should have done in certain scenarios. Well, last night hosting the Golden State Warriors, clearly Chris Finch was not enamored with Anthony Edwards' overall game. I mean, Anthony might have played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter. Yeah, Anthony, it was like 45 minutes of real time with the commercials and everything and the timeouts where Anthony Edwards was not in the game. And the lineup he was using that was working included Austin Rivers chasing baby Steph around, Kyle Anderson playing the slow-mo card, D'Angelo Russell hitting three after three after three. So there's a starter and a floor general, a quarterback who is in and out with the play, but it was very much in last night from a floor leadership standpoint, McDaniels and Naz Reid. Well, that's what Chris was talking about the other day, because Anthony Edwards is not only the identity of this team, it can be argued he's the best overall player on the team and an emerging superstar. But Chris was negative on something last night. I did not see the postgame press conference, so maybe he addressed it. But beloved Ant, was playing none in the second half. So then, late in the game, he inserts Anthony Edwards. And Edwards was cold off the bench. So what's he do? Comes in, chucks up a difficult three early in the shot clock, clank. I'm like, are you kidding me with this, man? I mean, is that the response to a quasi-admonishing during a game? And I love Anthony's game. But I mean, if you're sitting out and you're watching the complimentary players do their very best to beat the world champions who are at full strength, and then you're not part of it, and your response is you get in, and then immediately you get the ball, you take a very difficult three from a weird angle early in the clock, and it clanks off. Well, that's a microcosm of everything about which we're chatting right now. When I say the coach, you know, might have to stop second-guessing himself, no matter the names on the back of the jerseys. So then he misses another. So now he's missed two. And then he heads back down to the other end and fouls somebody. And I'm like, what is this disaster happening, this compensated anxiety attack happening right before our very eyes and ears? D'Lo, Anderson, Rivers, McDaniels, and Naz Reid were balling. Gobert dead. Groin terrorism. Cat still nowhere to be found. This Timberwolves team can be so disjointed at times with that terrible free throw shooting. And I got no idea where this thing popped up from. I mean, it's just bad. And like Finch said the other day, is like an amoeba. At times it can just spread and infiltrate minds so that everybody's thinking about it. And maybe that's the answer, but it's still unacceptable, specifically for a team that's going to be playing in close games. So the squad's disjointed, and you get slow-mo doing certain things, and he's a glue guy, and it's fantastic. Reed in, Reed out, Reed dominates, Reed gets beat, Reed dunks, Reed fouls. You know, so clearly more consistency is going to be needed there. This seems like a frustrating bunch to coach. And that they're going to need a month with Karl Anthony Towns and this group heading up to the postseason. Anderson and Reed have played so much that if and or when they get back Karl Anthony Towns and they can, you know, restart the adjustment, the fluidity of the cohesiveness of D'Angelo Russell and the pick and roll with Stifel, and there's Cat in the corner taking the Naz Reid shots, and Anthony Edwards playing point forward-ish type basketball. Well, they're going to need that. And if and or when it comes together, this is such a gifted basketball team that now has in Kyle Anderson and Naz Reid and some other complimentary players who have played so much and in certain situations, then mentally and physically, they will be ready for what's in front of them. But when Chris says, I should have stuck with my bench, I should have stuck with the twos in that situation. When he doesn't second guess himself, you get what you got last night. And that was a cohesive unit, playing the right way, not making stupid mistakes on defense, and not playing hero ball with the basketball. And despite being undermanned against a team with its dog lineup, what do you get? A victory over the champ.